We're going to go back to Psalm 37 today. Shocker. Stacy gets an A today. She guessed it. Psalm 37. Yeah. Uh-huh. How'd you guess? No. Everybody's a critic. But it will be two verses in a row. That's a hint. So last week, for those of you who weren't here last week, this chapter kind of shifted gears on you a little bit. Went from your status of your heart to how the status of your heart affects your everyday living. Last week we covered a pretty important subject in ceasing from anger and forsaking wrath. That aspect is crucial because it deals primarily with how we deal with immediate circumstances in light of future consequences. It is what you do immediately in light of future circumstances. Reacting in anger never yields good results. That's what we covered mostly. That's part of the shift in this chapter from dealing with our spiritual lives to dealing in our physical and emotional needs. It started with understanding the status of our heart and lining out our trust in God, but now the chapter is making sure we understand the physical manifestations of proper maintenance of the heart. The beginning of this chapter, of course, was dealing with how we maintenance our heart, keep a watch on our heart, how we learn, everything like that, making sure we're not fretting over the wrong things, that we're paying attention to the things that truly matter in the will and kingdom of God. We're going to read just a few scriptures today, but we're going to start in Psalm 37, verses 21 and 22. It's jumping way down there, but bear with me. It says, "The wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. For such as be blessed of him that shall blessed of him shall inherit the earth, and they that be cursed of him shall be cut off." So everyone knows where this is going, but it has two aspects to it. So we're going to start with one aspect of it. So what does it mean to borrow something? This is pretty elementary. There's no wrong answer, but there is. What's it mean to borrow something? Very good. That's actually pretty exact. You got your phone in there?
No.
Okay. Thought maybe he just looked it up in the dictionary right off. It's to take something from somebody with the expressed or implied intention of returning it with returning it in particular, or something of the same equivalency. This is why verbiage is most important, because when you borrow something, like, for instance, I'll walk up to somebody and I'll say, "Can I borrow a piece of gum?" Most people will say, "No, but you can have one because I don't want it back."
That's right. I've said that before.
And that is pretty good verbiage there, because if I say, "Hey, can I borrow a piece of gum?" They say, "Sure." And I don't come back later and spit it out in their hand, I have not kept my promise to fulfill to return it. Or the equivalency, I give them a new stick of gum, but it implies that I don't have gum when I ask somebody else if they have gum. So verbiage is very important there. So when you say, "Can I borrow something?" it is the promise of giving the thing you borrowed back, or the equivalency of it. I believe the equivalency of it is something like a financial agreement where you borrow money, but you're never going to give that same money back. It'll be the same amount, but it will not be the same bills that you borrowed from that person. It's the equivalency of what you borrowed. So borrowing, in essence, is a promise that you make. Just like we talked about at the beginning with a Christian and his word. Most Bible scholars, and I do look at this when I go studying, go straight to what's called the Christian truth in lending. And that means to never give money to anybody. More on that later. Who knows what the Truth in Lending Act was of 1968? Wow, that's thorough, and yes. It is the condensed version of it, as it protects against inaccurate and unfair credit billing as well as predatory lending, because it requires creditors to provide you with a detailed contract outlining interest and fees up front so you understand what you're getting into.
That's that thing you agree to.
Yes, it's pretty much when you scroll through the bottom and hit I accept, I accept.
Yeah.
That's what it's truth in lending. They have to give that to you when you sign a car contract, a house mortgage, credit card, anything like that. Their Truth in Lending Act requires that of all creditors. So they Bible scholars, and they don't call it this, but I call it this. The Christian Truth in Lending Act is that you don't lend money to anybody, because it requires you to give them all the stipulations of what you're giving them or lending them. So the Christian Truth in Lending Act is that if they don't know the truth, you're not giving it to them at all. So why does this go against what we're talking about in this here today? Because the principles of that is, if they're not a believer or they don't go to church with you, you just don't give them any money at all. Just like the Bum on the Street Act, where you don't give any money to them because you don't know what they're going to do with it. There are plenty of financial principles that Christians hold that are not entirely what we need to be holding true to, because they're really just, they call it wasting your money. So that lending that's talking about here has totally different principles than what we're talking about in other places. And we'll see why that's so important later. That's a lot of off-the-wall information that's going to come in handy a lot later in this lesson. So retention, retention, retention. So some quick basics. Borrowing, in its very essence, is to take something with the promise to return it or some equivalent. And that last part is to make provisions for financial lending. So as Christians, it's important to realize a few things about borrowing. So number one, you need to remember about borrowing is it'll happen sometime in our lives. Borrowing, unfortunately, is a fact of life. How you borrow, however, can be controlled. Number two, it's a promise we make to a company or to a person. And so when you do borrow, this is not just a contract, it's not just legal, but even me just borrowing $20 from Matt over there is a promise for me to return $20 to Matt at some point. The benefits of not having a legal contract is there's no time limit. However, we as Christians should understand that as soon as we can, that $20 ought to be reimbursed, because we have made a promise to return that $20, that wrench, that screwdriver. We all have that neighbor that borrows tools and never brings them back. So what have we as people just made a general rule of? You don't loan tools. At work, there's these technicians, and if you go across, you know, there's GMC and Chevrolet, and there's these GM special tools that GM sends to these shops, and they put them in this big old room, and some people do a better job of organizing them. But if I take a tool that Chevrolet needs from GMC or vice versa and take it over to that store, the first thing I hear from anybody is, you better bring that back. The golden rule of a technician is never loan a tool, because you will never get it back. They keep their toolboxes locked.
Is that right, man? Is that right?
It's right. Believe me. They keep their toolboxes locked because, in general, there's no borrowing when it comes to that. Most of it is lending to the Lord, because you never get it back.
Well, that's right. Most of the time.
Most of the time. And that's true of anything you loan or give. And that's why it says here that, you know, the wicked borrow and they don't repay, but the righteous show mercy and loan. Right? Wrong.
They give.
And so now the principles are completely switched around to do something we totally don't want to do, not with our tools, not with our neighbor, not with money particularly. And you don't know anybody until you start asking for money. One, there's the people who ask for money, there's people who give money. People who give money tend to get kind of miserly, because there's usually one person always asking for money. And then there's people you learn that if you'll give them money, they'll just keep taking money, and you just never get it back. And so we've allowed the principles of this to morph how we treat our stuff, our finances, everything about it, when the Bible says quite contrary to what we do. Let me just throw this in here. And when people know that you're loaning stuff out, including money or stuff or cars or gas, anything, people watch to see how you get it back, or if you get it back, particularly if you claim to be a Christian. Because nobody knows how a Christian should loan or borrow better than the unbelievers. They know no scriptures except for the ones that says you are obligated to give because God has given to you. We choose to ignore them. They choose to capitalize on them because that's the kind of economy we live in. And so when you loan something out, when you say, okay, well, here's $20, and you do it quietly, they generally go around their friends and say, well, I had to borrow $20 from so-and-so because, well, I knew he'd give it to me and I really needed it. And, you know, if they didn't go to their friends, they come to you. And now their friends know that they got $20 from you. And then they ask their friends pretty often, did you ever pay so-and-so back? Are you on good terms? Are y'all okay? Because you still have his $20. They tend to watch you. Why do they watch so close? Because it's right back to what we said before. You're a Christian, and the God you serve is a God of truth and unbroken promises. And if you're going to be like him, you can't break your promises or your commitments. Mm-hmm. And that goes with lending and borrowing.
That's right.
Earlier, we talked about committing your way to the Lord, and this is part of that. Because the strength of your commitment dictates the rest of your life and how you commit, what you commit, and how you honor those commitments. Because you can make 3 commitments and break 1, and the other commitments start getting really shaky. Because commitments are kind of like those Jenga blocks. The more you take out, the more it risks falling. Because once you break 1, it gets easier to justify breaking others. So who knows what the standalone trait of a commitment is over just a promise. A commitment is an obligation that cannot be broken without serious consequences. When you commit something, there's also something you commit against. And that's what makes a difference. If I promise you $20 and you don't get your $20 because I borrowed it from you 3 weeks ago, your loss is $20. But if I commit, it's something higher. You don't commit to pay somebody $20. You promise to pay someone $20. You commit in your entire life. And you commit against entirely something else. And so when you break your commitment to something, you then, it's like changing loyalties. It's like being a turncoat. It's like being a traitor. Stuff they used to shoot and hang people for. That's the difference. And so you, when you commit your way to the Lord, you're committing it against the devil. And to break your commitment to the Lord is to commit to the devil. And the consequences are very severe on your life. And so they're watching to see what commitments you will break. Where are you weak? Where do you think it's okay to compromise? Because we live in a world of compromise. In fact, if you go to marriage counseling, anybody young in here, and you decide to go to a marriage counselor, the first thing they're going to tell you is, you know, rule number 1, marriage is about compromise. And I'm here to tell you that's not true. Completely and totally not true. Because to compromise means you don't agree on core things. Because you don't just compromise on not eating green beans. You just decide not to eat green beans. You don't compromise on what's having for supper. You just decide what's going to have for supper. Compromising is on core issues that you must forever live with or without. Because a compromise is a choice against something as well as it is for something. So to say marriage is about compromise is to say you'll live your way and I'll live mine and we'll be happy. So if you ever hear that marriage is about compromise, I want you to say absolutely not, because you must agree on core beliefs that Jesus is Lord and he is the center of your life, and that's what you're going to center it around and not your compromises. And that's the same thing here. They're watching how well you can commit to something. Why? Particularly when you loan something, why do they watch to see how you honor this commitment? Because as the Bible says, they payeth not again. They want to see if you're just like them. If you loan somebody else $20, they're probably not going to give it back to you. Because they payeth not again. That's a universal truth. But are you going to do it? You see, this goes much, much deeper than just financial gain or loss here. It's no secret that we are at an all-time high for bankruptcy, foreclosure, and repossession. And sometimes there are circumstances where it just happens, but there's more than enough where people simply let them go back. People get tired of a car. They get tired of the problems. They get tired of the house. They get tired of this. They get tired of that. In fact, I heard a financial plan from somebody at my previous employer where they ran up all these credit cards and they said, well, what are you doing that for? How are you ever going to pay it all back? They said, well, I don't have to. I'll just file bankruptcy. because of all the new forms of bankruptcy they've come out. You see, they repay not again. This is the way of the wicked. They run up all the credit cards to do everything they want to do so that they can just wipe it out and buy a car in 2 years, because they don't care. Because see, they're going to go do absolutely everything and then wipe it clean and make it work for them. And it usually goes one or two ways. Mostly the second way, of that way downhill, because you can't live your life like that. But they believe you can, because everyone, that's what everyone tells them. If you say, man, I'm kind of struggling to pay my bills, first answer you get is file bankruptcy. You know what filing bankruptcy is doing? It's filing. You're literally filing to and saying to everybody that I am breaking my contract to repay these bills, and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. You're telling them, look, I thought I could repay you, but I couldn't. And all it boils down to is you being a terrible steward of whatever you were given. Because whatever you bought with those credit cards, it may have been an emergency, but how many $1,000 emergencies do we have in a year? Think about this. How many do you have? None. But you know what your emergency is? I need a new phone. I need a new TV. I need. Oh, wait. I need tires. Should have done that $5,000 ago. And then your actual needs pile up on your wants. And you buried yourself. So your answer then is to repay not your debtors. Because that's the easy way out. So what it boils down to is, instead of honoring your agreement, you decide what's fair and unfair, and you just let it go back. Because you didn't read the truth in lending agreement before you got the credit card, or got this, or got that, or got this, or signed that 20% car loan interest. That's not fair to me. Forget that I've run up my own debt and ruined it and filed bankruptcy 3 times in my life. That's not fair. I'll just let it go back, because that's the answer. You've decided to be dishonest in your financial dealings, and people see it. So borrowing correctly is a state of the heart, because what caused all your debt, bankruptcy, 20% car loans, just whatever, what caused all that? The very root of it, if you rewind their life, it's the desires of their heart were incorrect, and they were financially irresponsible because they needed it to be happy. So how important is it to teach our kids that it's not about having what you want, but having what you can afford, because the Lord gives what you need when you need it? Your heart ought to be closer to God, so that everything will be right in your life. And this goes beyond financial wants. Borrowing correctly is a state of the heart. It reflects honesty and your true commitment to doing right. But what about lending? The state of your heart's just as important when it comes to lending. The Bible says more about lending than borrowing. And there's a reason for that. And like I said earlier, everybody knows that until they're the ones lending. This particular passage talks about understanding that lending to most people needs to be an attitude of the heart, saying, showeth mercy and giveth. You see the need and you fulfill it with no thought of how you're going to get it back. There needs to be plenty of discernment here, of course. In Proverbs 19:17 says, He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he giveth will he pay him again. Tongue twister if you're dry mouth. The attitude of your heart should be whatever the Lord provides and how it can help others. You get a raise at work, what do? We can afford this now. And so your budget just goes, and then your debt goes, like, ooh, they're still rubbing pretty hard. Those bars are pretty level. That's not how you do it, guys. Because the Lord giveth, not so you can spend it. The Lord giveth so that you may give it also.
That's right. Yeah.
That you can put it back. And you're like, man, I got all this money put back. And then you see somebody says, hey, can I borrow $20? No. That's not the way this is supposed to go. The attitude of your heart, just like your borrowing habits, your giving habits ought to be just as ruled by the principles that Christ has put forth here.
Yeah.
Just like everything else in life, this area of giving and receiving is meant for one thing and one thing alone, and that is, how can what I do here bless the Lord's name and magnify it in other people's lives? Never does the Bible talk about lending without talking about having mercy as well. Because lending, in the end, has to have a context of mercy. Right here it uses the context that you already know that the wicked will never repay you. I mean, the Bible tells you more than once, you're probably not going to get paid back. Well, that's okay. But you lend it anyway because the Lord provided it to you to give and not to keep. Whether or not you're going to get it back, you lend because it's the right thing to do. And all this is super helpful in life, but do you think this passage is just talking about monetary lending? We've covered tons about monetary lending because it really rings true in people's hearts. You don't know who you're preaching to until you preach about giving away money. And then you find out who everybody is, usually in churches that I've been in. But I submit that it's so much more because you know you're never going to get a favor back. Because people say this all the time. Thanks, man, I owe you one. How many ones have you been owed? Do you keep track of them? Yep. You ought not to. You just ought not to. You pretty much can mark that down that you'll never get that one back. In fact, it's something I've made a habit out of saying, no, I'm just glad I'm able to help out. That's the attitude your heart ought to have. Because it used to be, when you say, thanks man, I owe you one, the classic response was, okay, I'll remember that.
Yeah.
And then you come back when you need something, you say, hey man, remember that one? Oh no. And all of a sudden, the interest is built over the months that you've remembered that one and you got to do something much more terrible. Part of being a Christian is that you're not like everyone else and that you hold their assumed debt over their head. God has never done that for you, so why would you be like that servant whose debt was forgiven and immediately go out and choke the guy and say, pay me what thou owest. I can actually use this money now. I don't have to go give it, because a lot of times people won't receive money because they know it's just going to go to the next guy. It's just like payday at work. We always go like this. Thank you. Thank you. And you just never see it, you know. And so I joke about payday being payday for somebody else but me, but that's okay because I had it to pay those bills with. It's not a monetary issue, but it is a heart issue. Have you ever had this one person that would give innumerably but would never let you forget it? I think we all have one of those people in their lives. A certain family member of mine who has passed on, bless her heart, was this way. Every time she would do anything in the world for you, but she would always bring it up later. Never wanting anything. But, hey, thanks, I appreciate that so much. But when you have to hear that like every day, I mean, it gets kind of old. Remember that $20 I loaned you? Did that help you? Yeah, it helped me, man. I sure appreciate that. And then, like, you know, hey, remember when I helped you with this deal? That was good, wasn't it? Yeah, sure helped me out. I appreciate it. That was 5 years ago. Yeah. Still remember it? Yeah, I sure do. That's the way people are. That is incorrect lending. Yes. Because you've lended it and never let anybody forget it. In fact, you brag about how much you've helped people and that the Lord should be thankful that they have such a faithful servant here on earth that helps everybody. Just because it's not monetary doesn't mean that you don't like to collect a little interest on that favor. Make sure everyone knows that you're a giving person so that if you ever need something, well, they'd give you the shirt off their back. You know I would. But I need something right now. Have you checked your heart lately on this matter? How do you lend to people? Are you like a walking credit card that lends only to charge an insanely high APR? Make sure people know that, you know, I'll do stuff for you, but you're never going to forget it. How many times have you said, man, this person could really help me, but I really don't want to ask that guy for help? I've been there, done that. I just need a little help with fixing a leak in my sink. Oh, I just don't want to ask him. Because he's going to do this, and then he's going to do this, and I'll never forget it. Usually I get a good story out of that. Are you looking for someone to help as the Lord helps? Not someone who helps with no strings attached, but someone that never lets you, and be someone that doesn't constantly remind people. You have to lend as the Lord lends. He lends and puts it away. At work, there's a few things for the dealership that they do where it's like training, and it's required training. But there are these people that say, hey, I can't get my training done this month. Do you want to do it? Sometimes they offer some money to do it, and it's super nice. It's like $10, but whatever. But a lot of times you do it, and then they forget to pay you. Funny how that works. Happens a lot. We're getting to that. But see, Elizabeth always says, has this person paid you yet? I said, well, no. Why don't you remind them? Because why did you help that person? Did you help that person for monetary gain? For what could benefit you? Or did you help them out just because they needed help? Look, I need some help. I can't get it done. Okay, I'll help you out, man. Cool, I'll spot you this much. As soon as I get this money, I'll spot you this much. Okay. Well, what if I were to come back to him every day? Hey, you get that money yet? Hey, bud, how was your weekend? Good, good. Hey, I was just wondering. I used to dread that about some people. They'd come around and say, hey, how was your weekend? Oh, you know, it was fine. They make small talk, and then they're like, so by the way, you said this the other day. Do you have that yet? Can you? And it's always, it's like the small talk that leads into what they really want. And that kind of bothers me. Just get right with, if you come over here for something, just ask me. But what if I did that every day? Hey, man, what's going on? Yeah, yeah, how the wife, how the kids? Okay, yeah, awesome, awesome, awesome. You have my $20? Your kids want dinner the other night? Come on, fork it over, man. You promised me first. That's not the way we are to do things. And that's just doing something for somebody. It has nothing to do with you owning them money. You just know that it could make you money. And everyone likes to do anything for monetary gain. They will never do anything for free anymore. No one has a hobby. It's always a business, a side hustle. Everyone has a side hustle. What do? I sand pencils for people who don't want to sharpen them. 50 cents a piece. Makes me a little money on the weekends. I mean, everybody does something. Nobody has hobbies anymore. It's something they turn into because everybody is money hungry. Yes. This is an incorrect attitude of the heart. If you can do it, good for you. If you can turn into a business, good for you, because there are some person out there that'll pay you to do anything. They'll pay you to sand pencils because they're too lazy to sharpen them. But that doesn't mean you ought to charge to do it. Sometimes your hobby can be just doing stuff for people. Going over somebody's house and helping them do something. That'll be $50. No, just do it to help them out. If you remind the guy daily about his debt, you're not trusting the Lord to provide for your needs, because you always need that money for something. Because all this comes back to committing your way to the Lord, to act like the Lord, to become more like Christ. And Christ didn't ask people for money. He told people, go catch a fish. Christ didn't say, I'll heal you, but you'll owe me one. What if he said that every time he healed somebody? How many ones would he be owed? Christ didn't care what others did for him. He did for others because it was his Father's will and our Father's will to do the same unto everybody. This passage here reminds you, the wicked borroweth and payeth not again. But let me tell you, if you're a Christian, you ought to give anyway. Show mercy, which is a character trait of God. You know, we are supposed to be more like God, so we ought to be more like God in this area. Examine yourself and see where we could grow here. Be willing to do something for someone for no reason. You ought to give as God gives to you, with discernment, as the Father does, But you ought not think of what everything could make you, what everything could do for you. If I make friends with this guy and keep him happy, I could get a discount over here. I could get this over here. I could get money for this. I could do that. I could build puzzles and glue them together and charge $30 an hour. Just because it's a hobby doesn't mean it's something you can make money at. The attitude of your heart ought to be to give, not to receive. Because what does it say about giving and receiving from the Bible? It's more blessed to give than to receive. And we ought to be merciful. How are your borrowing habits? Are they unhealthy to your spiritual life? Do you borrow as Christ would have you to borrow the necessary stuff? Or do you borrow for everything because it can get you it now instead of saving for it later? How do you lend to people? Do you lend to give or do you lend to get? Baptist churches have a terrible habit of preaching give to get. Well, the more you give, the more God will give you. So if I give $100 to missions, God will repay me with $150 and I've made money. Why do I need to work? That's a good business to get into. The attitude of your heart and how much you commit and trust God will greatly transform your giving and lending habits. Your lending, your borrowing, your financial habits, all of it will come right in the line because it's all right here in the Bible.